Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Premier Chelsea, your source for all things Premier League, but starting with Chelsea first. Coming to you on your speakers and headsets, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm Jackie from Houston, and I have a very happy Colonel Sanders from Connecticut. Rahul, how's it going, man?
It's going well, bro. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. So for anybody who missed the reference there, happy Halloween. It was Halloween this past weekend in the US and across the world as well, of course. And Rahul decided to dress up as Colonel Sanders. What inspired that, my friend?
Well, it was inspired by my new puppy, which we got earlier this year over in the summer, who basically looks like a fried chicken. So we put him in a KFC bucket, and I became Colonel Sanders, and my wife became a server at KFC. So it was kind of a family costume.
Very well executed, I might add. It does look, at first posting, I really did think there was a giant piece of fried chicken in your guys' hand, but well done. I really like that costume.
Thank you. I gotta give my wife the credit.
There you go. Well done. All right, man, let's jump into some reviews here because we have two games to review, and then we'll try and get to a preview today as well. Why don't we jump into Premier League first?
Let's do it. So the last time we spoke, we had the guys from Toon Army in Miami previewing the Newcastle game, and that's the first game we'll touch on. So we traveled away to Newcastle, St. James's Park, which was renamed after this game, but we'll get to that. And we started with Mendy in goal, Christensen, Thiago Silva, Rudiger in defense, Reece James, N'Golo Kanté, Jorginho, and Ben Chilwell in the midfield. Injuries keeping some of our attacking players out. So we had Hakim Ziyech, Callum Hudson-Odoi, and Kai Havertz.
Yeah, definitely have a few injuries in the final third of the pitch. But again, no shame in seeing players like Callum Hudson-Odoi. He's always been exciting talent. Hakim Ziyech missing quite a bit of football last year and this year due to injury. So good to see him getting a few minutes. And then Kai Havertz, the default as the number nine. So good team overall. And quick mention to Ben and Reece, who seem to be high-flying wingbacks at this point in the Premier League, huh?
Yeah, the wingbacks that don't really need to defend, according to Tuchel. They just need to do the attacking piece, and they've been doing it. But at the expense of jumping too far ahead here in the review, the first half, like we expected, Newcastle stayed tight, stayed deep, defended with their five defenders and their midfielders, and basically just wanted to play on the counterattack, like we had predicted, and the boys from Toon Army had as well. And Chelsea, like we do in most games, had most of the ball, controlled the game, you know, knocked it around side to side, tried to penetrate. Didn't really have the outlet. This is where maybe a striker could have helped, maybe. But first half ends 0-0. Ziyech did get a goal, which was offside. It was actually a very good goal. He picks it up kind of on the right wing, cuts in and bends it into the top corner, but offside, and probably could have used the goal. He could have, and we could have, but we didn't. And it ended 0-0 in the first half.
Yeah, I wasn't too upset about that, mainly because I fully concur with you. I did think that first half we were very, very dominant. I think we were missing that final maybe cutting edge or that final finish. But just to see Ziyech with that goal, and yes, I realized pretty quickly it was offside, but it excited me because there is some silver lining to that player there. It's almost a little bit of what we saw in Ajax and what we're missing when he cuts in off that wing. And we've talked about the formation, we've talked about the tactics, and it shows it doesn't really matter when this guy gets going. And we saw that a little bit in preseason, he can get a goal, and boy, does he have a strong left foot. So going in halftime, 0-0, yes, we want the goal, but we did predict it was going to be tough. So you got to come out and kind of fix things in that second half.
And fix things we did. I mean, I think there was a little bit of a tweak from Tuchel, who asked Hudson-Odoi to kind of push to the byline and to the wing instead of coming in closer to Kai Havertz. And I think that opened it up because it allowed some more space for Ben Chilwell to come in and drag some of the defenders out wide. And the first goal actually comes right after two substitutions Tuchel made with Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Ross Barkley coming on for N'Golo Kanté and the aforementioned Hakim Ziyech in the 64th minute. And a minute later, we get our first goal from Reece James and a cross that came in from Hudson-Odoi.
And what a goal it was, because it was on his left foot, which is incredible. And I'm not saying he doesn't have a good left peg, but for your right wing back to cut in and smash it the way he did with his left foot definitely got me off my chair. And I was like, yes, we're going to get a win here. And we thought we were going to, but good to get that goal in, especially when it's coming in the 65th minute. You've been waiting and waiting and waiting.
Yeah, absolutely. It was one of those shots, right? Like, he gets one touch, he controls it, puts it in his path. And then, like you said, with his left foot, he just fires it into the roof of that net. And that's exactly where he had to put it, because their goalie was there. There was a defender on the line. And both of them couldn't really do anything with this rocket of a shot that came in. And it was going to take something like that for us to score, because we weren't going to get that space in behind the defense. We weren't going to be able to take a shot from outside the box because they were closing us down. So just flooding the box with players and wingbacks and wingers and midfielders was one of the ways we were going to get it. And this was a perfect way for Reece James to get his goal for a second consecutive week after scoring against Norwich City last weekend.
Yeah, maybe he's taking the mantle away from Ben Chilwell as the other wing back, saying, let me show you I can score as well. Look, and credit to Thomas Tuchel. I think the changes he made were not only good tactically, but I think brave, because N'Golo Kante has been off form lately a little bit. It's a little bit disappointing to see as well. It almost reminds me, and I hope it's not the same, the decline of Essien, when Essien got into some terrible injuries. And I'm not saying N'Golo's injuries have been that bad, but you get to that point where one injury, two injury, three injury, you cross the age of 30 and you start to manage yourself a little bit differently. So that explosive energy pace is not there. And maybe Tuchel needs to manage him differently, where he's saved for key games and says, look, I'm not going to play you every single week. I'm not going to play you 90 minutes. But when I do put you out there for the big games, show me the old N'Golo that just tears up a field. And we've seen that this season already. He's been immense in a few games. So it's just maybe probably managing. But look, credit to Ruben Loftus-Cheek, incredible, making a name for himself. And Barkley, who I thought was a goner, slowly making a comeback and finding a few minutes here and there, maybe playing for a move, maybe trying to stake a claim to get more minutes. But good to see both of them coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would have to say those two are more for an attacking switch. Yeah. Now, I know you're taking off N'Golo Kante, who's all over the pitch and contributes on both sides, and Hakim Ziyech, who is an attacker. But with the addition of Loftus-Cheek and Barkley, you're almost saying to Newcastle, we know we're going to have the ball. We might as well have a little bit more attacking intent, even from deeper in midfield with Ruben Loftus-Cheek. And I think that helped, because we go on from the 65th minute when we scored the first goal to get a second goal from the same player in Reece James. And I know this was not as clean in terms of the strike or in terms of the buildup. But it's a shot that gets deflected into his path, and all he has to do is strike it first time again, straight into the net.
I don't care about the buildup as long as the ball ends up in the net, and Reece took full advantage of that. And it's a sign of how dominant we are that our left wing back and our right wing back kept ending up in not so much space, but enough space, and kept ending up in the penalty box just to get those chances. So good on that, and good for him. And I think that makes him our top goal scorer this season so far. Is that right?
In the Premier League, yep. That was his fourth goal in the Premier League. He scored against Arsenal, Norwich, and then two against Newcastle, which also put him ahead of Ben Chilwell, who you were mentioning, and Lukaku, who has three. So not a bad achievement for him from a right wing back position. And he himself has missed a few games already. So he must be feeling good.
Yeah, what did you say last episode? Who needs strikers when you've got wingbacks like Andrew and Reece James?
Hey, it's true. But that's the beauty of this system, right? Like, we have great players all over the pitch, but it just so happens that at this point, our wingbacks are the ones that are popping up. And I think we touched on it a few episodes ago, where Tuchel's made a tweak with these wingbacks where they come in more centrally. And that means when the ball gets dropped off from a Lukaku or Timo Werner or Kai Havertz, it falls to them, and they're the ones who are able to strike it very well.
Yeah, I got to say, whoever the coach is for the defense and is letting Reece and Alonso, of course, and of course Ben Chilwell practice their shooting, continue, because they are on red hot form, and let that continue. I don't want to see it stop at all.
Nobody at Chelsea wants to see it stop. But we do get a third goal, and that comes from Jorginho's penalty. Kai Havertz was fouled, penalty given to Chelsea, and he steps up and scores and makes it 10 straight penalties scored by Jorginho. And I think he became the first player ever to achieve that you know, feat in, I think, in the Premier League itself.
Is he staking a claim for Ballon d'Or over here?
He's staking a claim for that and to reclaim the top goal scorer award, which he won last season.
Yeah, interestingly enough, Tuchel actually mentioned that. I don't know if it was in this game after this game or another one, but said Jorginho was our top scorer last season. Great for him, but we need to put a little more pressure on our forwards to get more goals. And I think that will come in time. But Jorginho, penalty gets them, scores them. It's, you know, second nature to him. Reece is on a hat trick. You think he should have passed the ball over to Reece?
When that penalty was given, I was like, this is a golden opportunity to get a hat trick for Reece James. I think first time ever in the Premier League. And I'm sorry if I'm wrong about that, but I think I saw that somewhere for a defender to, or a right back to score three goals. And Reece himself has taken some good penalties this season, yeah. Which I'm surprised Reece didn't go up and be like, yo, let me take this one. And I think they asked Jorginho if he would have given it to him. And he said, if Reece had asked, I definitely would have, but he didn't. And we had a job to do, which is he is the penalty kick taker. And so he stepped up as a professional and took it. But man, as a Chelsea supporter and a supporter of the academy, it would have been great to see Reece James score a penalty and get a hat trick.
Yeah, and, you know, professionalism for Georgie, but professionalism for Reece. You've seen some incidents where other players kind of get in the main penalty taker's head by asking for that penalty. Yeah. So as much as we would both love it, maybe it's the right thing, and maybe Reece did the right thing by not interfering with what the game plan is. But maybe Georgie could have just looked over and said, hey, man, I've got enough penalties. Show me you can get a hat trick. But look, that's just the dream. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. But look, if he continues down this pathway, maybe we'll get a few more.
Yeah, and it's down to Reece to say, next time I'm just going to go for three goals outright. I don't need a penalty.
Yeah, absolutely.
But good win for us. 3-0 put us, I guess we were already on top of the table, but the way results went elsewhere, and we'll talk about them in a second, helped us open up a little bit of a gap up at the top of the table. And wasn't an easy trip like we had predicted. Wasn't an easy game. But once we got that first goal, it was Newcastle with their confidence, with no real manager on the sideline. I think it was always a case of if Chelsea score first, they go on and get the win.
So where do Newcastle go from here, Rahul? Are they going to find a new manager? How do you pick this team up? Because we're getting into December. Historically, teams at the bottom or around the bottom of the table at December really struggle to get out.
It's a good question. And we spoke to the guys last week. You know, they have to get a manager. I think that's where they start. Graham Jones has come in after Steve Bruce was fired, which if you look at it now, especially with the issues they're having bringing a new manager in, you say maybe Steve Bruce could have stayed for a couple more weeks and at least guided this team in some sort of way, not to discredit what Graham Jones has done. But I'm not a Newcastle fan, so I don't really know what he's done. But they're looking at Unai Emery, who's now backtracked and said, no, I want to stay at Villarreal. And so there doesn't seem to be a solid plan in place to say, this is who we go after, and this is our plan for the next 4 or 5 months. You know, they're still looking for a manager. They have another game this weekend, and maybe going into the international break is when they'll bring in someone new. And I think it's going to be Eddie Howe. It might be a name that some of our listeners have forgotten from, but he was managing Bournemouth for a few seasons, and he did well, kept them in the Premier League for a while, and he may be the right choice at this stage in the new ownership.
Yeah, and whoever they choose, they better make a decision pretty quickly here, because like I said, when you get stuck down at the bottom towards Christmas, it is very, very difficult to get out. And of course, Newcastle have gone through ups and downs in the last few seasons, but with this heavy investment, I'm sure the owners are going to try and do everything possible to at least stay in the Premier League this season, and the next season really build on from there.
Yeah, they also want, you just wonder, do you bring in a specialist like we've seen in the past that helps you avoid relegation? And then next summer you say, we're going to go after a big name manager and build from there. But the ownership obviously have some sort of idea what they want to do. So we'll see what happens.
All right. So business done, 3-0. We stay on top of the league. And I think we retain that position with a little bit of distance because of some other results. Maybe we need to talk about those.
Yeah, let's start with Man City, who were at home playing Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace have done pretty well this season. But I don't think anybody outside of Crystal Palace expected them to go to Manchester City and get a 2-0 win.
Forget Manchester City. I actually picked Vieira as one of the first managers to get fired. So I'm probably having to eat a lot of humble pie. I think you and I have eaten a lot of humble pie this year with our predictions. So we need to stop that altogether. Yeah, look, surprising, I think, losing 2-0. But one of the things I took heart in is you've got Conor Gallagher, who is really developing. And he was last season as well. So I can't say it's just something out of the blue, but really developing into a top-class Premier League midfielder. Now, whether he can fit into our squad is going to be a whole different story next season. We have to see. But if not, he really is playing for a big, big move in his career here.
He is. He's showing you his potential. He's showing you his value. He assists the first goal for Wilfred Zaha. And then himself gets a goal towards the end of the game. And I think he's been pretty heavily involved in everything Crystal Palace have done on the attacking end. And that's credit to him. He came back from West Brom. We've spoken about this in the past and did pretty well there too. But when you're in a relegation fight, like we've seen, it's all about defending and getting a result. And it doesn't really allow a player like Conor Gallagher to express himself, which he's getting to do now in Vieira's system. And he's raising his value regardless of if it's at Chelsea or if we decide to sell him, and long may it continue for the rest of the season.
Yeah, definitely one to look out. And for Manchester City, I think just a blip in the road probably.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but these are the games where you kind of wonder, and I know Pep said it himself, that every time we lose it, the question is going to come up. Did they need someone like a Lukaku or Harry Kane where they can win these games? But they lose it, and that's good for us.
Yeah, look, it's one of those age-old conversations, right? Pep has said this. You lose a game and goes, should have spent that $150 million on Harry Kane. You win a game and, oh, I'm a master in the false nine. So it's always going to be one of those yo-yo questions throughout the whole season. I think for me, it's just a blip. They're still a wonderful side. They always have been a wonderful side, at least in the last decade. So what more can happen? Sometimes it's business as is and you move on from there. And speaking of moving on, let's talk about the next big team to drop a few points. And that's Liverpool. For a while here, they've been right on our heels, huh?
They have. And for a while, we were matching each other's results and staying neck and neck on the table. And thank you, Graham Potter and Brighton, for fighting back from 2-0 down. And let's just put the Chelsea kind of agenda aside for a second. Brighton and Graham Potter are doing something very, very refreshing in that we had predicted, like you said, with Vieira, we had predicted Graham Potter to be and Brighton to be one of the teams that go down. And here they are.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And it's not a bad thing by any means necessarily. I think it's one of those things where as I look at it, I go, Liverpool didn't do much wrong on the day. I think Brighton just decided that, hey, we need to step up our game and let's show them what we can do. And they really did. And you look at Jurgen Klopp's interview afterwards and he wasn't upset. He wasn't frustrated in the typical Jurgen Klopp way because his team, like I said, did what they were supposed to do. Their game plan was well. They played well. Brighton just showed that they're not going to give up. And Jurgen Klopp said, I said it was going to be a tough game and they made it a tough game in the fact that they just kept persisting.
They did. And to be 2-0 down at Anfield is quite an achievement to say, we're going to now step it up and then come back and get a draw and pretty much could have won the game themselves. So it's everything that you want to see in the Premier League, right? You big teams obviously will kind of pull apart, but these are the results that make the Premier League exciting. And the Brighton that go away to Liverpool on paper is always a Liverpool win, but it didn't happen. And Brighton, I think, are going to have a couple more results this season like this that upset some of the bigger teams.
Yeah, and one thing that sticks out to me, Rahul, is that these are the results that may play a big part towards the end of the season. The results that you and I may remember should Chelsea go on to win the Premier League. Yes, it's early days, so I have to be very cautious with my words, but should we win the Premier League, I'll say, do you remember when Brighton drew 2-2 at Liverpool? That really helped us, and that gave us the confidence to go on. And it's one of those things, it's the magic of the Premier League. May it continue, and hopefully Chelsea can use these opportunities and continue to open up a gap.
Absolutely. And we said it before we opened up this round of fixtures after the international break. This was our chance to open up a gap. And so far we're doing it, and hopefully we continue over the weekend. But let's talk about another shock result, I guess, was Arsenal going away to Leicester and beating them 2-0. And Arsenal are making some comeback after the dreadful start they had to the season. They lost three in a row. And then since then, haven't lost at all in seven games and beat Leicester now.
You call it a shock, but honestly, I was not too surprised by it just based on form recently. Leicester seemed to lose the plot a little bit in the last few games here. And Arsenal seem to have found their rhythm together. I mean, you've got the likes of Emile Smith-Rowe, who's been compared to Mason Mount and Phil Foden in the same breath. And he seems to be picking up. Martin Odegaard had come in earlier in the season. He's doing well. Gabriel, their center back, they let go of Luiz, picked him up, and he's doing well. Ben White. So you look at these things, and I've not even talked about their goalkeeper, who's been pulling off some incredible saves, who I think you picked as the worst signing of last season. So we cannot do predictions anymore, my friend. But they're doing well. I think everything that Arteta is trying to do is coming into action now and coming into plan. So not so much a surprise, but Leicester probably need a little bit of a wake-up call or something different to go their way.
They do. And the other thing I was thinking with Arsenal, right? They had injuries, they had issues at the beginning of the season, but now they pretty much go week to week without any midweek fixtures. So Arteta has time to work on build up for the weekend, and he's got his players fit. And with the wins, they start believing what he's doing on the training field, and that's helping them. And that we saw what happened when Conte did that with us. And I know we'll refer to that name here in a few minutes. But I'm not saying Arsenal go on and win the league here. Maybe they do. But this is what happens when you don't have distractions during midweek for a young manager and a squad to kind of work on things and improve.
And a young squad as well. I know they've let go of David Luiz. They've let go of Willian. So they've dropped some older players. They've dropped some wages. And so hopefully things can go in the right path for them. Yes, we're avid Chelsea fans, but we've always said Arsenal are a club with a lot of history and have typically fought for the top four, not been in and around that recently. So look, I'm just going to stay quiet and watch now, because every time you and I make a prediction or badmouth a club, they seem to go up firing. Let's talk about another club, Rahul, in London, and that's West Ham. We've said it now for weeks on end that they are really a club in form. David Moyes has got them firing in the right direction, going for the jugular every time, and going for the jugular in a 4-1 defeat, killing off Villa, who we'll talk about Villa in a second, but maybe you have some ideas on what happened here.
West Ham happened. They're gelling very well. Everyone knows what they have to do. They get goals from defenders. They get goals from midfield. They get goals from Antonio, who's their main striker. And they're managing, like I was saying with Arsenal, they've got no midweek fixtures. West Ham do have Europa League. And traditionally, we've seen when teams get into Europa League for the first time or first time in a while, once the Europa League and Premier League games are back-to-back, they struggle, and West Ham don't seem to have these issues. And I'm looking at it, they've scored more goals than Manchester United and as many goals as Manchester City.
Very, very impressive indeed. And yes, they're getting goals from defense. Yes, they're getting goals from midfield. But you talk about Antonio, who started his career off as a right wing back at some point. And David Moyes and some other managers have really turned this man's career around. I mean, he's looking at as deadly as can be as a center forward, and definitely somebody who's in good form. No, he didn't score in the last game, but that doesn't mean he's not contributing and moving and excited. And it's good to watch him. But on the counter side, this Aston Villa side, who, you know, we thought that, you know, losing Grealish was a big deal, but they went and invested wisely. They got some good players, but doesn't seem to be going to plan so far for them, does it?
It doesn't. It's gone south after their win against Manchester United, I think, four or five games ago. And that's the concern for them, is that should have been something that kicked them on, and they've regressed and gone backwards. And from what I read, I think the Aston Villa ownership are looking at the next game against Southampton. And if the result doesn't come, then they may have a decision to make over the international break, which is crazy, because Dean Smith kept them in the Premier League last season, helped them progress and get up the table. And this season, 10 games in, they're thinking about making a change.
I think they're missing John Terry, Rahul, because he was probably there teaching them how to defend a little bit, huh?
He was. And we've seen it, you know, like you said, when the assistant manager leaves, some teams do fall apart, and we did when Ray Wilkins left us under Ancelotti. So John Terry definitely could be the missing piece here.
Yeah, they need to fix that up real quick because they do have a decent squad and they performed well last season. So really not sure where they go from here. But let's talk about another game that happened, and that is... Sorry, I've just lost my train of thought for a second here.
I think we were going to just briefly touch on Wolves versus Everton, mainly because Everton losing another game and Wolves finding some form. And for Rafa Benitez, like just for a quick second, this is not the way to impress the Everton faithful who didn't want him in due to his Liverpool connections. And he seems to have also lost, the plan and things aren't going their way. And they have a tough fixture list coming up. I believe they've got Tottenham, they've got Manchester City. So things don't get easier. But on the flip side, Wolves, who themselves weren't winning at the beginning of the season, have found some form. And with their attacking duo of Jimenez and I forget the I think it's a Korean player, Hwang,
I believe, yeah.
Yeah, they've been doing well.
Yeah, and it's almost like a reverse card over here because Everton were the side that started off on fire. Players like Demarai Gray, Calvert-Lewin were performing really well. You're excited to watch them. And then Wolves, who we were like, they don't look the same since Nuno left them, and we'll get to Nuno in just a second here, but now it's a flip side and we're wondering what's happening. And there's not really much I can say other than sometimes these things happen in the Premier League. We just have to wait and watch and see how it plays out over the next few games.
Yeah, I agree. And for Benitez, I think he has some time, but beating the likes of the names I mentioned that come in the next few weeks will definitely help him. But let's move on to the game that was termed El Sackico, because it was Nuno and Spurs coming up against Manchester United and Ole. And the joke was whoever lost this game would get sacked, as the manager would get sacked. And it was a joke, but it turned into reality pretty quick because Manchester United beat Spurs 3-0. And this is the same team that lost 5-0 the week before. They get goals from Ronaldo, Cavani and Rashford. And at the end of the game, Nuno was booed heavily by the home crowd, which was at the Tottenham crowd. And 48 hours later, he is sacked.
You know what? That was a shocker. And you know why? Because I think all of the tabloids, all of the media, all of the noise around El Sackico, as you call it, was more towards the Manchester United manager and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So you wonder, yes, it was a poor defeat. Yes, they didn't look like a team that was cohesive. But I'm looking at the results here, Raul. I think Manchester United have played 10 games and won 5 of them and had 2 draws. Tottenham have played 10 games and won 5 of them, but have had no draws. So it's not like they're drastically different from Manchester United in the fact that where they're performing, even table-wise, there are a few spots between them. But 17 points to 15 points here. You've got to wonder how this kind of went from the Ole show getting sacked to let's get rid of Nuno Espirito Santos.
It's just, I mean, I guess if you think about it, right, you said 5 wins, but no draws, which means 5 losses.
Right.
And those 5 losses have been Crystal Palace 3-0, Chelsea 3-0, Arsenal 3-0, Manchester United 3-0. I'm missing the last one, but I think it's in those 5 games where they've lost, the crowd hasn't seen any desire or any fight.
Right.
And they haven't seen Nuno been able to change anything from the sideline and inspire maybe getting a draw, a fight back. And I think that's where the frustration was on against Manchester United, at least from the crowd, that they feel like they've made some progress, but they've regressed from last season. And it comes down to Harry Kane isn't performing the way he was supposed to be. Son's kind of fallen off, and the rest of the team just didn't seem inspired by the manager. And that's sad because he was put in a position where he really wasn't supposed to be, because their first choice was Antonio Conte, and let's talk about him now. Last summer, he said no, he didn't see the plan of he wasn't seeing the ambition from the club. And he said no, and they eventually bring in Nuno. They sack him 4 months later to now then bring Conte back in. And I'm thinking about him like, Conte, you said no 4 months ago. You've seen what a shit show it's been for the last 4 months, and now you're saying yes. So obviously the money is right. He feels he can come in and save the situation, which, again, favors him. And I think everything is in favor for Conte, but you look at Spurs and Daniel Levy and you're thinking, you've basically just lost 4 months and lost 14 million because you're now paying off Nuno as well.
You know, and before we get into the Conte situation, because I have a lot of thoughts on the Conte situation, with regards to Nuno, he did a wonderful job at Wolves, given the team, given the budget. And then he comes to Spurs, you know, bigger team. We don't call them a bigger team, but bigger team in reality, bigger budget, of course, as well. First game of the season, beats Manchester City in an epic, epic game. And it goes downhill and you start to wonder, you followed through with, you know, Pochettino couldn't get the best out of these players. And then you start looking at, okay, we're going to bring in Jose Mourinho, who was a serial winner, and he couldn't get the best out of these players. And now you call Conte, he goes, there's no ambition in this club, so I'm not coming. And of course you get Nuno, who again, I repeat, did very wonderful things at Wolves. Do you give that man time? Do you say, look, we take that 100 million, 150 million for Kane, let him go to Manchester City, use that money to invest in the squad and build it out the way Nuno wants. And maybe we're talking about a completely different Spurs here. I don't know. Those are just kind of the high level things that pop into my mind as we talk about Nuno in this particular situation. But Conte, that is an interesting signing for them, and not as a player, but as a manager, because he brings passion wherever he goes. And I think that's something that Spurs have really lacked in the last few months here, even towards the end of Jose Mourinho's tenure. Passion is more than just screaming at a player. I think with every corner, with every throw-in, with every free kick, with every goal, this man is losing his mind. And I think the Spurs fans need that.
They do. I think I was saying the players weren't inspired. I think the fans themselves weren't inspired by Nuno. And that's a complete 180 now, because you've got Conte, and we know it firsthand from supporting Chelsea and watching him three or four seasons ago. That man fought with Jose Mourinho on the sideline because he was being too dramatic and stuff, according to Jose Mourinho. He's jumped into the crowd when we scored goals, like you said. When Batshuayi scored that winner against West Brom, Conte was jumping all over his staff. So I think all of that is going to inspire the crowd, obviously, but even the players in training are going to look up and say, this is a guy who's won things. He's won the Premier League. He's won the Serie A. He's won the FA Cup with Chelsea. So is this the guy that the players need? Absolutely. Because if he can't get you going, then you really need to question why you're in this sport and why you're playing in the Premier League. But for Conte to come in and take this position now, there's definitely some certain assurances have been given to him from Daniel Levy. And we've heard 100 million in January, could have been 100 million in the summer, and you could have built over pre-season and not started 4 months or 3 months into the season. That's where the criticism is. But as Chelsea fans firsthand, we know that a managerial change always or most likely brings a boost and brings trophies at the end. In our case, just 9 months ago, we brought in Tuchel and we won the Champions League. So that's what Spurs must be hoping for. And when a name like Conte is out there, you kind of have to make the decision and go for him before a Manchester United end up with him.
Yeah, and look, that's a good segue into that conversation. And there's a few more things I want to talk about Conte, but Manchester United, you've got to wonder, you know, they've given Solskjaer time. I think that's one thing I always want a manager to have, is to give them time. And you wonder, all of this talk of El Sakiko and Solskjaer may not make it if he doesn't win this or that. Maybe they missed out on a top quality manager here. I don't know. Maybe Solskjaer is the right answer. I'm not a chief of executive of Manchester United, but you talk about ruthlessness, and now I'll bounce back to Tottenham here. I hate to use them in the same vein, but they almost seem to follow the path of champions, and the champions here at Chelsea is what I'm talking about. They went after AVB when we let him go. They went after Jose Mourinho when we let him go. They've gone after Conte after we've let him go. They're following this trend of sacking managers, paying them off, and bringing somebody who's more qualified, for lack of a better word. That they're held on to Harry Kane because they're a big club and they need to hold on to their stars. It's one of those trends where they're trying to do the right things. Spin back to Manchester United. Maybe these are the things you should be doing. When Paul Pogba was making a lot of noise a few seasons ago, maybe you should have let him go and taken that cash like we did with a Matic or with a Robben even many, many years ago. because we wanted to make the best, even with Hazard, which hurt me when we let him go for 100. We made those tough choices because we knew that the future of the club, every next game mattered. And that's the stuff Spurs is doing. And will Manchester United sit to miss that and say that we could have done this? Again, I don't know. It's just a good conversation and topic to talk about. The other thing I'm looking at here, Rahul, is the table. And Chelsea is sitting first with 25 points and Spurs are sitting with 15, which 10 points seems like a lot, but only 10 games have been played. There are 28 more to go. It just takes Chelsea missing three. And I use Chelsea as a benchmark, the other teams in between. But it takes Chelsea missing three wins and Spurs taking three wins to close that gap very, very quickly. So, and there are a lot of games to do it. So I'm not going to sit here and say, like, yeah, Spurs are – I have done it, unfortunately, saying Spurs are a small club and they're following Chelsea. But it's very easy to catch up if Conte does all the right things and goes on a string of wins like he did in a similar time frame against Arsenal with us.
He did, and that's a hope, at least from Tottenham's side, is he can come in, change things around, inspire the players, inspire the fans, and get these performances and keep clean sheets, which – Spurs under Nuno failed to do in some of these bigger games. And Conte definitely has some of the players. And like you and I were talking before we started recording, I was saying he's got a few players that can fit his back three and four in midfield, similar to Tuchel's system in a way, but not exactly the same. But for him to make, or for him to come in and make the changes or the impact that is expected, he's got to have the right tools. And we were comparing it to Chelsea and we said, well, he came in and took us from 10th to first. And I said, well, he had Eden Hazard who had an off year and had to bounce back. He had Diego Costa who had an off year and had to bounce back. He had Matic, he had Willian, he had Pedro, he had David Luiz he brought in, he had N'Golo Kante he brought in. And then you start looking through Spurs squad and you're like, okay, they have Kane, they have Son, they have Reguilón, maybe they have Højbjerg. But after that, you're like, those players, at least in my opinion, aren't there yet. Yes, he has 100 million. He can spend it the way he wants to. And maybe he'll improve some of these guys that aren't even in the squad right now, like Victor Moses and Alonso in our case. But I don't know. Spurs, for some reason, always do Spursy things. And I can't compare them to us because we have that winning mentality and we have the champions mentality. Maybe Conte gets that in Spurs, but I don't see him taking them as far as he took us.
Everywhere he's gone, starting back from Juventus, Chelsea, now Inter, he's changed things and he's got results. Now, does that mean he's going to come in here and win the Premier League this season? I don't know. It's definitely possible he could turn some magic on there. But at the very least, I think he's going to get results and that's what they want. And I'm looking at this squad, Hugo Lloris, very good goalkeeper, France number one. He's probably going to play a back three. You've got Sanchez, Eric Dier and Romero, who's another pretty solid back three. And you start looking at the right wing back. Emerson Royal is a player. I mean, he doesn't defend as well, but as a right wing back, you don't need him to. So you might get the best out of him there. And then in Ndombele, yes, he's got some issues they talk about with training, laziness or personality, but on his day he really is a top quality football player. We've seen that for the France squad, we've seen it for Tottenham. Reguilón, you talked about at left wing back, and then you've got Højbjerg who will put his skull through a wall if you ask him to. So you've got some of these players that Conte likes and that profile that he likes, and not to mention you just said Son, Kane and maybe Bergwijn or Lo Celso or whoever is going to play in that top three or two, whatever. The starting 11 is there for him to hit the ground running. Now, the missing pieces, if they are giving him 100 million in January, that could be exciting. But who's available, who's going to come, it remains to be seen. I guess the point I'm trying to make is he will get results. I just want to see how many results he gets and how quickly he gets them and how far up the table they can climb in this time.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the fixtures you were mentioning. It only takes three games to catch up to Chelsea. And they've got some winnable games coming. I know we've said they faced Chelsea already. They faced Manchester City already. They faced Manchester United already. West Ham already. Arsenal already. So that's some of the I say bigger in quotes, but tougher games out of the way. And he can now say, okay, over the next six games, we go and pick 15, 18 points. And all of a sudden it switched and it changes and it becomes, we're going to go on a run of fixtures like he did with Chelsea. I just come back to the squad and I don't think it's there. And we've seen Harry Kane hasn't been the same player this season. Now, if he has a conversation with him and like we saw in that documentary between Jose and Kane, maybe Kane comes back and does the things that we expect from him, but it's going to be interesting. And it's an interesting job for Conte to take because it's a position where he gets to basically build up and build his profile. If he becomes successful, he's considered one of the best managers. If he does what he can with Spurs and takes them to the promised land, which is a trophy, I think he's definitely going to be considered one of the best.
I have to agree with you. I think there's no easy way to disagree there. So, I mean, that pretty much wraps up that Premier League review for this past week. A lot of things happened, a lot of changes, but in interest of time, maybe we want to jump into the Champions League now.
Yeah, let's do it. So, winning away 3-0 to Newcastle, we flew away to Malmo in the Champions League for match week 4. We beat them in the reverse fixture at the Bridge 2 weeks ago. We came over to this game and a couple more injuries. Conte missed out, Mount still ill, Timo and Lukaku still out. So the starting 11 was Mendy, pretty much set in stone. Christensen came in, Thiago Silva and Rudiger. Reece James was rested, so Azpilicueta played right wing back. Ruben Loftus-Cheek came in for N'Golo Kanté, Jorginho and Alonso in midfield, and then the front three stayed the same of Hakim Ziyech, Hudson-Odoi, and Kai Havertz.
Yeah, I mean, again, with the chances of injury and different rotation and whatnot, I think the squad does well. Good to see Christensen playing that right centre-back position. Nice to see he can fit in when needed. Alonso coming back in, I think it was tough for him to get a game with the form that Ben Chilwell is, but if any game, this is the right one for him to get. And then, of course, Ziyech and Callum Hudson-Odoi needing to continue behind Havertz. So, good squad overall, and I must be honest, I didn't get a chance to watch this game, but I'm sure you can fill us in on what went down.
Yeah, it was more of the same in terms of we dominated possession, we dominated the game. Malmo were a little bit more aggressive from the last game where we pretty much rolled them over. They came out a little more aggressive and in fighting, but we still had most of the ball. We tried to make things happen and got a couple of shots on goal, but nothing major to write home about in the first half. We could have maybe had a penalty, but it was a 50-50 call where Kai Havertz swings his leg back to shoot and the defender kind of comes in and catches him. But referee said no and not much to complain about there. First half ends 0-0, and I must say Ruben Loftus-Cheek once again impressed in that first half and for the rest of the game, but especially in that first half he was looking good with his turns, with his driving, and almost works well with Jorginho in the sense that Jorginho can stay even though he didn't sit too deep in this game. Jorginho has the ability to sit deep and Ruben Loftus-Cheek turns into that maybe box-to-box player. And our wing backs with Alonso and Azpilicueta, nothing wrong with that. Definitely not contributing the goals like the other two, but they can put in a shift. And the second half starts and pretty much the same, but then we end up with the goal in the 56th minute. And you have to commend Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Hudson-Odoi, who were heavily involved in the buildup. A 1-2 between them, which releases Hudson-Odoi on the right wing, and he makes a good run. And if you haven't watched it for whatever reason, if you haven't watched it, go on any social media website, go on YouTube and just watch this goal, because Hudson-Odoi makes a beautiful run and the ball in itself was just perfect. Like right on the foot of Hakim Ziyech, who all he had to do was place his foot there for a tap-in.
I like your passion behind explaining the goal and making sure that all the fans watch it. Look, it's good to see. And Ruben Loftus-Cheek, Rahul, I think one thing I'm noticing about him this season that we didn't necessarily see in his quote-unquote best season with Sarri is his versatility. I think it's nice to see him as the typical box-to-box in this particular game. We've seen him play behind the striker in that two that Tuchel likes. We've seen him play as the anchor in midfield, and he hasn't really put a foot wrong no matter where we've put him. So as much as, yes, Callum Hudson-Odoi has been great and we rave about him, I think Ruben, who doesn't always get the plaudits, good to see he's playing all these different roles and impressing whenever called upon.
He is, and that's what you want to see from a guy who, we've said it so many times, he's had his injury issues, he's come back, and he's performing this season, and he's forcing Tuchel to play him, not like forcing him and saying, play me or I leave. He's forcing him by his performances, and that's what every player in this squad around the world should take out of this is, you perform, you get played. And that's the bottom line. And Hudson-Odoi is another one that's performing now. I think he's had back-to-back assists in the Champions League games. So it's good to see. And we've always said injuries present an opportunity for other players. It's about how you take them. And these guys are taking them and running with it. And Hakim Ziyech getting a goal after not getting one against Newcastle. And I think that will do him well. I think he prefers the UEFA competitions. So it's good to see.
Yeah, and we have a lot of football this season, like we've said many times. So if that's where he's going to perform and that's where he's going to get his chances, good. Just take them while they come and then we go from there.
Yep.
Another interesting thing that happened, because I saw that you had said it, Captain America making his much-anticipated return to the lineup. How did that go?
It went well. 2.5 months since his last appearance against Crystal Palace at the first Premier League game of the season. He's back. He's had a rough time, COVID, injuries, illness, but he's back and he looked pretty good for the most part for a guy who's not played in a long time. He looked good. And it was just good to see him back and adding an option for Tuchel in that attacking third. And he could have scored himself at the end, but he's rusty. And as Alex said on his Twitter, he's saving the goals for Burnley this weekend.
That's completely fine as long as he does that in the match. And look, Raul, I think it's good because the injuries have come a little bit early on in the season. So a couple of key people, Lukaku, Werner, Kante, Kovacic, Mount, Pulisic, if they can now get fit towards this Thanksgiving and Christmas period, which is extremely busy, it's going to be incredible. I think we're going for the World Club Cup as well. So you've got to figure out that if we're fully fit and these guys can go, it stands to be a fun Christmas period here for us.
It does, and that, and we've said it before, that's where we tend to struggle or the wheels fall off the bus like they did last season. So that's where we have to stay focused, and we are about to head into another international break, the final one for at least this part of the season. So some of these injuries almost mean these guys don't go on international break and stay with the club, which is great because they can rest up, get recovered, get ready. And that's good because we'll need them, like you were saying. And to the point of the fixtures, we've drawn away to Brentford in the Carabao Cup, which we play right before the Christmas break or Christmas holiday. So a lot of games coming up, and the Club World Cup in itself is going to be in early 2022 in Abu Dhabi.
Yep. So we're going to looking forward to that one because it's a chance to win another cup there. But from win to win to win, exciting times. Let's move on to a Premier League preview, and we're playing Burnley this time around.
We are. And just one last thought on the Malmo game. Harvey Whale was on the bench, didn't make it onto the pitch, but the youngster is getting the opportunity to travel around with the first team squad, which is great for him. And he's looking to sign a long-term contract with Chelsea. So hopefully this is all part of the experience for him. But yes, coming to Burnley, like we said, our final fixture before the international break, our fourth fixture in Premier League. And could be an opportunity for us to get maximum points before we head out for another break.
It's one of those games on paper, and we'll get to the starting lineup in just a second. We should be pocketing this one, especially given the form. So on paper, who's the starting lineup for Chelsea, Rahul?
I mean, I think Mendy stays in goal. I think Azpilicueta, Silva, and Rudiger in defense, which allows Reece James to come back in at the right wing back. Kante, if he's available, I know we said he missed the Malmo game, very precautionary, but he'd had some muscle tightness. And if he hasn't recovered from that, then Ruben Loftus-Cheek is a great option. But I would go with Kante and Jorginho. Chilwell at left wing back. And then I think we're still light in the attacking third, but Ziyech, Hudson-Odoi, and Havertz have been doing well, so they get the nod.
Yeah, given injuries, I think that's the best starting lineup that I could have hoped for. Again, there are a few more guys that could get a shout in here. Maybe Christensen, maybe Saar, maybe Chaloba. I think the defense is looking pretty well healthy at this point in time. So that's good to see. But good starting lineup overall. What can we expect from the game? And maybe give me a prediction.
I mean, it's Burnley. We expect a fight. We expect physicality. We expect them to stay tight and wait for us to unlock the defense, as they say. And this was actually Tuchel's second game in charge when he first joined back in January, where we ended up winning from goals from Aspilicueta and Alonso. So could be an opportunity for our wingbacks, wherever they are in this game, to get goals. And Burnley have been doing okay this season. They've been kind of on and off, only won one game, which came last week against Brentford. So they're, you could say, on a high and come into this game thinking that they could and hoping that they could get a result. And they definitely could. It's Sean Dyche and Burnley. But I think we're on our own high and we want to end out this period with a win. So I think we win it 2-0.
Good shout. I do agree with you that Burnley is going to be extremely physical and it could get a little bit tough. But, you know, the ginger Mourinho is going to meet Thomas Tuchel. And I've got to be my overly overconfident self and that we're going to go for a 5-0 drumming of Burnley over here. I want to see goals. I want to see Kai Havertz among that. So, and if our wing back get into it, why not? I'm excited to see that as well.
5-0. Wow. If it happens, we'll be happy. And if it comes from the wingbacks, I'll be even happier because that would mean my fantasy team is doing pretty well.
There you go.
But yeah, that should be a good game. And we'll be watching. We'll have some highlights on our stories if possible. And I'm actually going to head out and watch the game with our local Connecticut group. So that should be a good time. But before we wrap this episode up, we do have to touch on the Chelsea women who are back from their international break. They played last weekend against Manchester City in the FA Cup semi-final. They won 3-0 with goals coming from Erin Cuthbert, Melanie Leopold, and Beth England, sending us to Wembley to face Arsenal on December 5th in the FA Cup final.
Yeah, so that should be a pretty big game. And I'm glad to hear these names, Rahul, because I'd asked you a question several episodes ago about we keep hearing the same names scoring goals, but it looks like we have some diversity here. So that's exciting to see.
It is. And if we win this competition on the 5th, we would have had a clean sweep of the English trophies in 2021 because we won the Conti Cup, we won the Super League, and now we're in the FA Cup final. So it's great to see. And another bit of positive news is Emma Hayes, I think, won the Pundit of the Year. Wow. In England. So these awards keep coming her way and Chelsea's way, and it's exciting to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to see what she does next and what this team continues to do over the next few games here.
I agree. And speaking of that, they go away to Aston Villa this weekend in the Women's Super League, hoping to get 3 more points and continue the charge up the table and maybe close the gap on Arsenal.
There we go.
But that wraps it up. Thank you very much for listening. Please continue to subscribe, like, and follow us at the Premier Chels on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Instagram. And on Twitter, it's at Premier Chels. And as always, please send us your feedback. We love hearing from you. And we will be back later this week or maybe in the early part of the international break with a new episode. But until then, stay safe and up the Chels.